Is there anyone here who believes that these two women should not be married? Sally and Maria, these were the opening lines of a sermon that I gave back in Divinity School when we had to do a hypothetical special occasion sermon for my preaching class. I had no idea what I was preparing myself for, you know, to work with you all. So I preached the sermon as a commentary and a wedding for a lesbian couple. So I continued, of course, a lot of people think these two people should not be married, but yet here they are committing themselves to love without permission from others, sustained by their God and one another. I gave what I thought was a really good sermon. And my professor sat me down after I gave it. She said, you know, Elijah, was creative. It was prophetic. It was meaningful. But it was also a bit controversial. Are you sure you want to begin someone's actual wedding giving other people the opportunity to stand in the way? It works for a class, she said, but I'm not sure I would do it for real people, an actual couple, because it might cause a little bit of controversy, stir up something. Speaking of stirring people up, the text that we read this morning stirs up something. Let me frame it just a bit for you. The book of Ruth begins this way. A certain man takes his wife, Naomi, and his two sons to Moab, a foreign country, to escape the famine. I don't know if it's economic hardship causing political hardship, or maybe it's political hardship causing economic hardship. So him and his family migrate to this other place. They look for a new life. They travel across a few borders, and they settle in the land of Moab. And while there, the patriarch dies, so the sons take over their father's households. They marry women from Moab, Ruth and Orpah. These are intercultural marriages, but yet after 10 years, both sons also die. And Naomi is left with her daughter-in-laws in a foreign country, and so she decides that it's best just to leave now, because all the men in her life are now dead. So she makes her way back to Bethlehem, and she tells the young women that they can go on and live their lives. They can find hope. They can still have a chance, because they can still get a man. But for her, her hope is lost. So Orpah accepts and leaves. But Ruth, she stays. And we get these powerful words from Ruth to Naomi, from one woman to another. Do not press me to leave you or turn back away from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die and be buried. May the Lord do this and so much more to me, if even death sets us apart. These words are good, powerful. Lauren and I had them read at our wedding. But it does an injustice to the text, to Ruth's story, if we don't mention the controversy at the very heart of this text. Two women are committing their lives to one another thousands of years ago in the Bible, and now our society sees these words of commitment as the quintessence of commitment. I mean, think about it. In a world where men did the leading, men did the ordering, men did the moving of families, men decided which wives to bring in and which daughters to give away, men decided the legitimacy of children, where men were almost completely in charge of the lives of women, where the family's name was in the man's name, the family's household was the man's household, Abraham's house, Isaac's house, Jacob's house, when the lives of men, when the family's name goes to the oldest son and skips past the women, the daughters, when the family was something that was understood as something that men were responsible for and that men ruled and that men were the heads of the households of Ruth, says, well, I think I want to do things a different way. Ruth proposes a new way to do family. Proposes a new way to do family where roles and responsibilities are shared and reorganized, where two women lead the family together. Y'all see that, right? Where two women lead the family together. And for me, it raises the question for all of those who are quick to tell us that this isn't biblical or doesn't sound biblical or the Bible would never support something like this. This sure sounds like something that is biblical to me. What is marriage if not the type of commitment that Ruth makes to Naomi? And we cannot overlook that. We cannot skip that, even as we try to understand this story. There's something queer happening in this text, I would argue. But also, as important as the romantic interpretation is, it is not the only one. The model for family that they propose is for all of us who desire loyalty, commitment, love, all of us who want a family. See, as much as I'm reading this as a polemic against heteronormativity, I'm also reading it against the idea that marriage is the only way to have a family. Perhaps it works for some of us, and that's great, but it will not work for all of us. And in our quest to be just, we cannot superimpose that expectation on others. And so in a real sense, Naomi thinks that her life is over because she can never be married again. And Ruth reminds her that she can still have a life despite that. That she can have life and love and loyalty and stability and security and all of the things that she mourns. See, Ruth presses us to redefine the family so that it works for more of us. How do you define the family? Who's your family? How should we define the family? How should our lives look differently? How could our lives look differently if we weren't so attached to the patriarchal, nuclear, Western, heteronormative, Victorian concept of family? How would our lives look differently if we didn't just privilege blood relationships? How could our society be more just if we had a more complicated understanding of family for people who are unpartnered, widowed, divorced, disinterested, conflicted, in process? How would our world be better if we upgraded our understanding of family that wasn't so white, that had a little bit of influence from Africa, where the extended family mattered, the entire village mattered, the entire nation was considered to be family? How would our understanding of family be better if we had some influence from Asia and Latin America, where loyalty and commitment to the ancestors and elders were venerated because of what they knew? How could we infuse some other understandings of family in our lives? See, some of us can't see what God is doing and trying to do in our lives because our understanding of family is so narrow and rigid. And the blood that we come from perhaps is broken and toxic, harmful, shameful, or absent. And so we feel like we can never really have family. But God, through this biblical narrative, breaks in and says that friends can be family. Co-workers can be family. Neighbors can be family. Classmates can be family. A church can become family. A church can become family. and we can be each other's families right now. We can choose and be adopted in and claimed by a new type of family. We can reinterpret and reconstruct and reimagine family. And I think that's part of why Matthew includes this story, telling us where Jesus is from, the people that Jesus comes from. I think what Matthew is trying to do is to show that Jesus comes from a complicated family, a controversial family, a family that's not that normal. And that's precisely the point, that that's where God breaks into the world. It's through Jesus' ancestors like Ruth and her partner, broadly defined, Naomi. That's the family that Jesus comes from. And I think that Matthew wants us to know that even if we can't reconcile with our own families because of the harm that they cause, that God's family is always open to us. God's family has room for us. God's family has space for us. And so God, through Matthew, through Ruth, pushes us to say to one another that if we are in Jesus' family, then we must go where each of us goes. That Jesus' people, like Chris said, must become our own people. And really, Calvary, the question for us this Christmas is, are we open to the radical refamiling that's happening in this story? Will we go there with one another? Will you let your people become my people? Will you let my understanding of God become your understanding of God? See, this question gets to the heart of the matter and what we do as a church. How do we become one people in light of what Jesus' birth means? See, look around this room. Our people really do come from all over, from Germany and Bulgaria, England and North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, El Salvador, Mexico, Venezuela, Peru, Cuba, Chile, China, the Philippines, India, Korea, Mississippi, Louisiana, Liberia, Vietnam, just to name a few. And the question for us is, will we let each other's people become our own people? Well, let me put it this way. Will we let the aspirations of those people become our aspirations? Will we let their hopes become our hope? Will we let their struggle become our own struggle, their condition, their despair? Will we become each other's people? Will we let the God that they call upon in the midnight hour, will we let their moral and religious imagination become our moral and religious imagination? Will you let my people be your people? Will you let Harriet and Frederick and Nat and his co-conspirators Lucy and Charlotte be your people? Will you let Lito's people be your people? Annabelle's people be your people? Omundi's people be your people? Will you let their God be your God? See, my friends, that is the controversy of Christmas this morning, that God is trying to come into the world and make us one people. And Ruth prophesies on her posterity, on her own children, that we can set up a world where we become each other's people. But first, we got to say and be willing to do what we say, that I will go where you go. I will lodge where you lodge. Your people will be my people, and our God will be our God.